The party's over for the Democrats, and the work is just beginning. Senator Barack Obama is now officially the presidential nominee for the Democratic Party. He delivered the acceptance speech last night at the Invesco Field in Denver, speaking of America's promise.
Individual responsibility and mutual responsibility. That's the essence of America's promise. And just as we keep our promise to the next generation here at home, so must we keep America's promise abroad. If John McCain wants to have a debate about who has the temperament and judgment to serve as the next commander-in-chief, that's a debate I'm ready to have.
Obama attacked his rival Senator John McCain, but was it enough to lock in undecided and crossover voters? For more, we have our very own Farai Chidea. She's still in Denver, getting ready, though, to head to Minnesota for the Republican convention next week. Joining Farai are Melissa Harris-Lacewell, Associate Professor of Politics and African American Studies at Princeton University, and Mark Lamont Hill, Assistant Professor of Urban Education and American Studies at Temple University. Farai, let's begin with you. I know you've got to get to the airport. There were great expectations going into Barack Obama's speech last night. What do you think people there wanted to hear?
Well, they wanted to get an affirmation that a black man could be the president of the United States, that a man who was not as old as many of the past presidential candidates could be the president of the United States, that a man whose biography showed a sense of cultural mixture and hybridity could be the president of the United States. And they wanted to believe that what they believed was believable.
Now, would you say, Melissa, that the historic nature of the day overtook or mixed in with the anticipation of Barack Obama's acceptance?
I think the most true sentence in Barack Obama's speech last night was when he said that this is bigger than him. I think that's no question about the nature of reactions, the way that people in that stadium felt, the way they were talking as we left the stadium was 100% about kind of the historical moment and their sense that Barack Obama had captured that moment. But had that speech, just the language of that speech, for example, been printed somewhere, it was not so exceptional. It was good, but it had everything to do with the stagecraft and the capacity and people's sense of history in that moment.
One of the things, Mark, that was characteristic of the convention as it began on Monday was the issue of unity or the lack of unity. How did you sense that issue resolving itself last night?
Well, first I would say that I think to some extent the issue of disunity was overstated by the right in order to sort of spread seeds of discontent among people who are Hillary Clinton loyalists. That said, last night I saw a sense of unity that was almost overwhelming. I think what Hillary Clinton did on Tuesday and what Bill Clinton did on Wednesday really did help to unify the party, help to heal some of the wounds, allowed people to vent, allowed people to heal. And as a result, I think when Barack Obama appeared on that stage on Thursday, there were 75,000 people who were firmly behind Barack Obama as their nominee.
Now, Farai, we have some news that I would like to get you to sort of chime in on before you have to get out and head to the airport, and that's this. We now know who the vice presidential selection for the Republican Party is. Perhaps it's too early to get some reaction, so I'll ask you for yours.
Well, I think that the reaction I would give is from Republican loyalists. There is a blog, for example, called The Pink Flamingo that was saying, you know, draft Sarah Palin. Choose Sarah Palin. Sarah Palin is the governor of the wonderfully beautiful but somewhat chilly state of Alaska. She was pregnant in office at the age of 44, her fifth child. A lot of people saw her as this sort of superwoman who is wife, mother, and governor. She is someone who is an incredible example of counter-programming to perhaps the Obama-Biden message. It's like, hey, you got the Negro, we got the woman. It's definitely going to be on.
All right, Farai, we know you've got to catch a plane. We're going to let you go. But Melissa and Mark, I want to continue the conversation with the both of you about the events last night in Denver. And let's focus in, if we can, on Obama's speech. Melissa, you were saying that you felt that the speech had some particular significance. In what ways did the speech hit home for you?
Well, certainly the opening video, it was, you know, in this big space, which was a big football coliseum, people were walking around during the warm-up speakers. They were paying attention, but there was also a lot of noise. But I can tell you that when the lights went down and the video introducing Barack Obama came up, it was as though 80,000 people went silent all at once. It was pretty powerful to see. And so every time that Barack Obama mentioned that the country could be a better place, or that his personal biography, his grandparents or his mother, I think those were very poignant moments. They made people feel that they were in touch with the Obama story, that he was like them. And that was a very important hurdle that Barack Obama needed to overcome.
Well, one of the things, Mark, that was an issue prior to the speech is whether or not there would be, A, enough specifics, or B, enough inspiration. Seems to me from watching it that he tried to do a little bit of both. Was he successful in both areas?
Oh, absolutely. He was successful in both areas. I mean, you know, the Republican attack, the Republican critique has been that Barack Obama gives grand ideas about hope and change without any sort of policy specificity. And what he did was he outlined several key foreign policy issues, domestic security, national security, domestic economic issues. He laid things out in a way that was palatable, that was accessible, and that was interesting. At the same time, it wasn't at the expense of providing a message of hope and inspiration to his base. I think he did an excellent job in both areas. The problem that I had with the speech was simply I didn't think that he spoke articulately enough and clearly enough about issues of civil rights, issues of human rights, and I think that was something that was lacking and something that is emblematic of his entire candidacy.
Mark, it's interesting that you should mention that. We did hear some other comments relative to people thinking that he didn't talk enough about African Americans or civil rights issues during the speech, but here's a reaction from someone who was in the stadium to what Barack Obama had to say.
I never voted in my life. I'm 53 years old. And I'm voting this time. I registered about 3 months ago. Most definitely not because of his blackness, but because of what he stands for.
So it's your view that there should have been more about civil rights in the speech, Mark?
Yeah, I mean, I would like something about civil rights in the speech. I mean, when he talked about, the American people and how it reminded, when he sees certain people, it reminds him of his grandmother and it reminds him of his mother. He invoked these really interesting images of hardworking, working-class white people, but I would love to hear more conversation about the poor. You know, he invoked Martin Luther King sort of implicitly, but he didn't even say Martin Luther King Jr.'s name at the end of the speech. He didn't give honor and credit to the tradition of black freedom fighters and black politicians and black presidential candidates on whose shoulders he stands. And I think he squandered a really important moment to link August 28, 2008 to August 28, 1963 in a more profound way.
Melissa, was this an issue for, first of all, did you notice it, A, and B, was it an issue for you?
I think for me, certainly I was surprised that in telling his family narrative, as important as it was, he did not tell much about the stories of the black people who had influenced him in his life, short of Michelle, his wife, who has been important, and his children. So there was a way in which you didn't have a sense of him emerging out of black people. But I'm okay. I'm less worried about that, because it was clear to me from my experience in the stadium that everyone leaving that stadium is going to vote for Barack Obama. It was an electric, amazing, moving experience. But by going so incredibly detailed on his policy positions, in other words, by responding to what the Republicans have asked him to do, Barack actually also created at least 15 sound bites for GOP commercials going into the fall. We haven't gotten to the GOP convention yet, and we haven't seen what they will likely do with those comments on abortion, those comments about gay marriage. I think we're going to come to see this speech through very different eyes.
How would he have been able to distinguish himself more clearly, let's say, from John McCain, had he not offered this litany of positions on some of the values issues that have been his Achilles heel so far?
Again, the values, it's one thing to make an argument just about sort of his own position on them. I think what Barack did repeatedly over the course of the speech was to make it too much about the ways in which it was just him as a strong leader, which is good. He needed to demonstrate that strength. For me, what Barack does not do in that moment of talking about social issues is he does not give a place for the social movements, the activities of ordinary people, which make those issues important to the Democratic Party.
One thing that I noticed last night at Mark, and I want to know if you noticed it as well, it appeared to me that for the first time in recent days, at least, certainly for the first time in the campaign, that the Democrats, specifically Obama, appear to go on the offensive as opposed to being on the defensive with regard to their charges about Senator McCain.
No, I definitely noticed that, and I was quite excited about it. On the first day of the convention, I was quite worried that this was going to be just another love fest and that it was they were going to replicate the mistakes of the Kerry Convention in 2004, where they talked about their policy plans, they talked about their agenda, but never launched a sufficiently aggressive attack against the Republicans. This time around, from day two forward, you began to see an increasingly aggressive, assertive, but respectful attack against the Republican vision for America, and I think they'll be rewarded for that. I think you'll see a bump in the polls. I think you'll see their base get organized. I think you'll see undecided voters shift toward the Democrats a bit right now. Now, of course, next week, a lot of this will depend on what happens next week, but to be sure, I think their aggressiveness will be rewarded.
Final thing is this. We know now that the Republicans have made a choice for vice president. How much do you think, if at all, the events in Denver played a role in who John McCain ultimately chose?
Well, I've been saying for quite some time that I thought a woman vice presidential candidate would be a good pick for McCain. What he's betting on there is that there's still enough post-Hillary Clinton anxiety within the Democratic Party to pick off a group of older white women who could be just enough in some key states as a demographic. What I will say is that whatever else Barack Obama did or didn't do last night, I am pretty convinced that he put to rest the notion that what these older white women need to do is to depart the party of their choice in order to vote for the Republicans where there is a woman vice presidential candidate. I don't think now, post-Denver, that this VP choice is going to have the effect that John McCain hoped that it would have.
Mark, you get the last word.
No, I agree with Melissa. After this convention, I think they've certainly pushed back against some of the potential dangers of having a female VP. However, there's still a very significant slice of Democratic voting women who may now think, hey, I can make history either way. I can have a female vice president or a black president, and in light of everything that's happened over the last 6 months, I think that could come back to bite Barack Obama in November.
It's been a very busy week. Thank you both. Get some rest.
It'll try.
Melissa Harris-Lacewell, an associate professor of politics and African American studies at Princeton University, joined us, as did Mark Lamont Hill, an assistant professor of urban education and American studies at Temple University.